Dennis Walker versus Abbott Laboratories.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Patrick Lemet. I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Dennis Walker. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, the issue before the court today arises from a motion to dismiss. The review is de novo, and the issue is of particularly historical significance to this circuit and significance in the national perspective as well, because the decision of this court will affect thousands, if not millions, of employees that are traditionally labeled at-will employees. The issue before the court is whether or not 42 U.S.C. extends and protects at-will employees. And the question before the court is whether or not there is sufficient contractual relationship with the at-will employment status to support a 1981 claim. The district court below believed, based on one of the panel's rules in the Seventh Circuit, of Ingersoll, Gonzalez versus Ingersoll.
One of the panel concludes to the judges on this panel.
It certainly does, Your Honor. Judge Wood and yourself were on that panel. Fortunately for this appellant, it was everyone has agreed that it was victim in that, and that the issue has not been precisely decided. However, since that particular decision, five circuit courts of appeals in this country have specifically address the issue of whether or not the at-will employment status is sufficiently contractual in nature to support the claim, and have all unanimously agreed that it is. Now, each of the circuits have taken certain different routes to get to the conclusion. For example, the Eighth Circuit in Skinner versus Marit decided the issue based on Missouri law, holding that since Missouri state law considered the at-will employment relationship contractual in nature, then it was sufficient to support Section 1981. In the cases such as Spriggs versus Otto Diamond out of the Fourth Circuit, that circuit took a different route and held that the statute itself and the legislative history of 1981, including the 1991 amendments, clearly foretold that the at-will employment relationships in the statute would extend and reach and cover the at-will employees and offer protection.
Well, let's pause for a moment on Illinois law, since that's where we are. The Supreme Court of Illinois has described at-will contracts as, or at-will relationships, I would say, as contracts of indefinite duration, has it not?
They have, Your Honor. The Illinois Supreme Court has described the relationship as contractual without fixed term or duration of that particular relationship, but nonetheless contractual in nature. All that is missing is that simply there is a term to the contract. So to the extent that with one...
But the term is that it's, if it were day-to-day or hour-to-hour, not annual or every 5 years or what have you.
That's correct. There is the parties to that relationship have not agreed to a time frame. In other words, the employer is free to terminate that employee at any time. The employee is also free to terminate that relationship at any time. The only exception to the termination is that the employer may not terminate it for illicit reasons or unlawful reasons. And those reasons include such as the federal anti-discrimination statutes, filing a workers' compensation claim. This circuit has recognized that one cannot be fired even as a real employee when there is an opportunistic discharge at play. So there are a variety of circumstances where the common law and statutes have recognized that there are unlawful means that put the brakes on the at-will employment relationship.
Now, your opponents have argued that you're raising all of this too late, that somehow you had an obligation to ask to amend your complaint again or to ask the district court to reconsider its ruling on this point.
And I would specifically like to address that point. The argument is that Mr. Walker should have walked into the district court after the Third Circuit Court of Appeals decision came down and asked the court to reconsider its decision in light of another Circuit Court of Appeals decision. At that time, that would have been Perry versus Woodward out of the Tenth Circuit. Before the district court, and arguing that the at-will employment relationship was sufficiently contractual in nature, the appellant had presented to the district court two circuit courts of appeals decisions, the first being out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, Fayette versus Planned Parenthood, and then the second court of appeals decision that was presented to the court was out of the Fourth Circuit. So there was no reason to believe that if the appellant had asked for a motion to reconsider simply because a Third Circuit Court of Appeals had decided in that manner, that the trial judge would rule any differently. In addition to that, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, the decision that came down after the court's ruling, was the Perry versus Woodward, and that arguably could be based on New Mexico law, which would have no application to the case before the district court here. Finally, probably most importantly, the district court believed that this circuit had decided the question in Ingersoll, Gonzalez versus Ingersoll. And therefore, it would have made no sense whatsoever to go back to the court under any circumstances to ask for a motion to reconsider because those points had already been argued, the points were considered by the court, and the district court had rejected those very points. We believe, Your Honors, that either way the court looks at this particular issue before the court, whether or not the legislative history dictates that the Section 1981 applies to at-will employees, whether or not the word contract in the legislation itself has a substantive meaning and its ordinary meaning to encompass the at-will employment relationship, or whether if this court applies Illinois law, each of those applications results in a single conclusion that at-will employment relationship is contractual and that Section 1981, 40 CUSC Section 1981, does encompass at-will employment relationships, and therefore we ask this court to reverse the district court's dismissal of Mr. Walker's Section 1981 claim. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Odorizzi for Defendant Abbott Laboratories. I think that when counsel said we were arguing that they should have sought reconsideration from the judge below, that is not our primary argument. Our primary argument is that Section 1981, unlike some of the cases they cite, is not the only vehicle that the plaintiff here had to bring a discrimination claim.
I understood that that was one of your arguments, but I found it either baffling or beside the point, because the plaintiff is the master of his own complaint. The plaintiff did raise a 1981 claim and lost. If the plaintiff in some later piece of litigation, you know, once this is all wrapped up and put to bed, tried to come in and raise a Title VII claim, the doctrine that protects you is claim preclusion, right, because it could have been raised and wasn't raised. But we aren't there yet. We're still in the middle of this piece of litigation where the plaintiff, to my knowledge, under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, had no duty to ask repeatedly for reconsideration from the district court, had no duty to ask for a 54D certification. We don't even know if the district court would have chosen to handle it that way, and was entitled, under very clear law, to wait for final judgment. Basically, we don't like interlocutory appeals. So the issue is here, and I have a hard time seeing what's procedurally wrong with the issue being here today, even if, as you quite accurately point out, this is a very small corner of what once was a rather large piece of litigation.
Right.
So
it is. Well, it's not only that it's a very small corner of the litigation, which it is, but it's also that Mr. Walker, when the judge denied class certification, at that point all he had was his individual discrimination and promotion claim. And he chose at that point, even when he had a Title VII claim pending, to pursue only one theory under Title
VII. Sure, but a disparate impact theory, as you well know, is quite different from a disparate treatment theory. You use different kinds of evidence. The statistical evidence you might use to prove an impact case has very little bearing on disparate treatment cases. And I'm just surprised that you aren't focusing on the one claim that he is bringing, because That's right. His penalty at the end of the day, if he loses this, is that he can never raise those claims again. And that's the way the law handles the kinds of legitimate problems that, that you're raising.
Well, that's right, Your Honor. But in this case, he has, as a factual matter, the question is, we think that as you go through this whole lengthy 4 years in the district court, that he has essentially abandoned the factual basis.
But why would he abandon it? He raised it, the district court rules against him, he waits for final judgment, and he takes his appeal. Your remedy, if he should prevail here, is simply to move for summary judgment after whatever procedures the district court thinks are appropriate, and see if he's got anything. I mean, we don't know because we have no record on,
right,
on any of that.
But what we're put, you put, Your Honor said before that you discourage interlocutory appeals, which is true. But what had he has done by not raising his claim of intentional discrimination in promotion when he could have raised it as a Title VII claim, it's the same.
He had no duty to raise it. He had no duty to raise it. If we start penalizing people for not amending their complaint often enough when they take an appeal from a final judgment where he's now lost everything, you don't disagree that this was a final judgment,
absolutely,
I take it. I see all sorts of undesirable policy consequences from that, where we sit around and say, well, you know, you could have amended your complaint, so we're going to, other than the standard claim preclusion rules, people are entitled to lose along the way and then take an appeal.
Well, Your Honor, I would say ordinarily that's true, but...
And why is this case different? Why did he have a duty under the law? You have not cited me a single case that has found the kind of duty you're arguing for.
I suppose the question here is whether he abandoned his claim. If he had stood up and said, I'm abandoning the factual basis, I don't think I can prove...
So why do you think he abandoned his claim when he presents it to the district court, he gets a ruling on the merits from the district court under 1981, which, while quite similar to Title VII, isn't a complete match. For instance, you can go back 2 years instead of 300 days, and there are, I would certainly agree with you, rather minor, but there are differences.
In this case, he wasn't precluded. I would agree with you if he was totally precluded from bringing a Title VII claim, then all he would have had would have been the 1981 claim. But he wasn't. And what he did is he's bringing claims against us on a seriatim basis instead of litigating at a time when he could have.
And the district court had denied his right to, they kept trying to come in with these amendments. Didn't the district court deny the Fourth Amendment completely?
The district court did not deny the Fourth Amendment because that was an attempt to broaden the class at a time when the class certification was being litigated. We are in a situation, Your Honor, where going back after 5.5 years after the employment decision that he complains of was made, and we're here twice instead of being here once at the end of the case because he chose not to raise a factual claim that he could have raised all along.
Well, if I can get back to your reconsideration, there is no rule of procedure that even mentions a motion to reconsider,
right,
is there?
That's right, Your Honor.
And do you agree in his reply brief that there's no requirement to actually bring a motion to reconsider?
I agree with that, Your Honor. And I agree that that would be a rule that would cause certainly a lot of unnecessary motions to be filed in the district court. But we think it's the circumstances, all of the circumstances, the fact that we went through discovery on his individual claim, and here you're being led to believe that his only theory is a disparate impact theory. And at the end of the day, he says, I don't have anything on that in response to our summary judgment. He files an appeal. He never says to the court, but I want to pursue on my individual claim a disparate treatment claim. And then at the end of the day, he files a broad-based notice of appeal raising a variety of different issues. And then only pursues this one claim that he could have raised before. I think it's a unique situation, and that in this kind of situation where you have a factual basis for a claim, which you could pursue on a legal theory that's available to you, that it just promotes piecemeal deal is promoted.
Do you have an argument on the merits, actually? Because Gonzales certainly rather clearly says, we don't have to decide this today.
Right.
And I guess I would raise the same question we were discussing earlier with respect to Buckhannon. Why should this court become an outlier against all the other courts of appeals that have now decided this 1981 case and be the only court in the country to say that it's not enough of a contract to support a claim?
Well, I think, Your Honor, if you were looking at it afresh, we would argue that you could certainly interpret the statute to say that making and enforcing contracts doesn't apply to at-will contracts.
Well, we could, but why should we on an issue like this when every other court of appeals that has squarely confronted it has done the opposite?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that is our difficulty here, that if in 1999 we were back where we are today, I doubt that this motion would have been brought making this argument. But the problem is now we've gone through all this time, and we go back to our argument that the argument should be deemed waived because he had the opportunity to make this factual argument throughout this period of time. He didn't need 1981, and we're here on an issue where the court does not have to decide because he had a federal discrimination claim. He could have raised it, he should have raised it, and he chose not to. And having made that tactical decision, we think he should be deemed to have abandoned his claim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much?
May it please the court. Briefly, in reply to the arguments raised by my learned friend from Abbott, the question of whether or not that appellant is the master of his or her own causes of action is clear. He chose the 1981 for strategic purposes. The court ruled that because there wasn't sufficient contractual relationship, that those claims were dismissed. We then properly preserved that claim for appeal, and once we had the opportunity to appeal it, we did. With respect to waiver or abandonment, those particular issues only arise in two certain situations. Number one is as if in the court below I had raised Title VII, then subsequently abandoned it in the district court, and then tried to re-raise it in this court would properly hold that claim was waived. In the second instance, it is if the claim was never raised in the district court below, but attempted to raise it before this court, that claim would be deemed waived. Neither one of the situations applies here. The 1981 claim was pressed below, it was properly preserved, and it is pressed up before this court. Therefore, in the cases that have been cited by in the response brief to our brief, have absolutely no application whatsoever to the claim that's on appeal. The central issue on appeal is whether or not this circuit is prepared to join its sister circuit in embracing Section 1981 in the employment at will context. That decision will affect hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of employed people. For those reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully request, for the reasons contained in our brief and those in the oral argument today, that this court reverse the district court's dismissal of Mr. Walker's 1981 claim and remand this case for further proceedings on the merits. Thank you.
All right. The court will take this case under advisement.